that leadership, that authentic leadership, is a big piece of who you are. I passed the 40 mark last year.
40 CIOs you've mentored or coached.
That's quite significant. Whoa.
Welcome back to CEO Tech Live, where the greatest minds in business and tech share their hard-earned lessons, insights, and stories. These are the change champions of industry. You'll discover the keys to success for leading innovation, growth, and stability within your organization. This podcast is powered by Hexaware, the world's most loved digital transformation partner who seeks to create smiles through great people and technology. I'm your host, Ben Fanning. Let's go.
Welcome back to CEO Tech Live, powered by Hexaware. I've got a treat coming your way today with Andy Haywood, who is Chief Modernization Officer over at Yorkshire Water, the water utility organization providing water to 5 million people. Andy holds a diploma of education in executive coaching from the Academy of Executive Coaching and an MBA with a focus in strategic management from the Open University. Previously, he was Chief Information Officer and Non-Executive Director at the Furnace Building Society. And his career spans over 2 decades with board experience across retail, financial services, and utility sectors. He also served as Group Chief Operating Officer in Brown Group and Group CIO at Co-op, with other leadership positions at Boots UK, Halifax Bank of Scotland, Asda, and Walmart. Holy smokes. Andy, welcome to CEO Tech Live.
Is that me you're talking about?
That is you, my friend. Meet yourself. Yeah, what a storied, great background. And a lot of interesting questions coming up for me today. First of all, what is Chief Modernization Officer and why should organizations consider one?
My boss, the chief executive, we had a long debate about this, and we came up with a name because we wanted it to signal something to the organisation. So it's also a point of conversation. The number of people who said, "What the heck's a chief modernisation officer?" And it gets the conversation going, because at Yorkshire Water, it's definitely an organisation that wants to modernise and transform and go back to, this is the key, go back to being one of the best run water companies in the UK. So the modernisation was trying to get across, we need to transform, but we've done it before. So this is not some alien concept that your colleagues couldn't get behind, feeling of kind of, wow, we probably couldn't do that. We'd done it 20 years ago. So the modernisation word was very key, very deliberate, as well as I've had some merciless ribbing from my colleagues of what the heck is a modernisation. But yeah, so it's been one of the best things we've done, actually, humour side, but equally sending a message to the organisation that we need to change, but that the organisation had done it successfully before.
Well, this seems very intentional. And I think it's powerful for leaders to consider that in their titles, because you may have CIO, CTO, but to have a chief modernization officer sends a message that we're moving towards the future. But it's interesting because it's a utility, right? It's been around for forever. And you think about utilities modernizing, it's not something that's probably associated with utilities that often. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, certainly in the UK, the regulatory environment is getting increasingly tougher and tougher. The political agenda and the ordinary citizens' agenda, they want cleaner rivers, even cleaner drinking water. Wastewater, they want it taken away in a safe, friendly, environmentally sustainable way. So the whole water industry is really having to wake up and modernise and improve what they do, but in a, as I say, in a very sustainably and environmentally friendly way. That's a key thing, with less resources, relatively less money from the regulator. So it's a very interesting time, utilities in the UK.
Well, it seems like utilities worldwide could use a chief modernisation officer. Really, every organization should, to some degree.
And one of the things we've done in the last couple of years is we're bringing balanced, but more people in from other industries. I was talking to a compatriot of mine in a utility, and they just brought someone in from the aviation industry. Because I'm a big believer, as you started off reading my war stories, that I've worked in many different industries. I'd say 60-70% of those core leadership and management skills and experiences are all transferable. You know, probably 25% is not. That's industry specific. So I'm a big believer in a balance. Of course, you need people who are experts, but people from other industries that can bring other perspectives, even an international dimension. So you're getting a nice, rich mix, skills, experience, diversity. So yeah, it's very interesting in utilities.
Yeah, I love that. And I hope all utilities are taking note that having a focus on the modernization principle, not just keeping things going, but it's more regulatory globally now. Yeah. And we know things about water that we didn't know 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And so clearly it's changed the direction of it.
Yeah.
And I want to take time to dig into your background a little bit more, but where do you think water is headed for the next decade or two?
Well, I think it's going to be absolutely front and center. As I say, certainly in the UK, it's gone from, you know, it probably wouldn't have made the front pages of the news 2 or 3 years ago. It's not always for good reasons, by the way, but it's now a front page issue. I say the friends, associates, we all want cleaner rivers, you know, no sewage spills and all those kinds of things. And I think, like I say, it's gone. I think it'd be an election issue. We've got an election coming up at some point this year. And I genuinely think it'll be a front page election issue. So quite an exciting time to be in utilities, believe it or not. But I think the other thing is, again, certainly from my perspective, technology again can play a huge, huge part in all those things that we spoke about, from productivity to cleaner rivers, better environment, you know, technology. Certainly without kind of going off beam too far, something called operational technology. So basically telemetry. So we've got hundreds of thousands of devices, intelligent devices on all our networks, sending back, you know, whether an asset's performing, it's underperforming, lots and lots of operational technology, as well as digital, and of course the other things, AI, all the buzzwords. Technology is going to play a fundamental part in utilities going forward.
What do you think people would be most surprised about when it comes to the water industry and technology?
I think to the layperson, they wouldn't connect the two. I think you said, you know, you kind of think of utilities as quite a conservative, steady.
Yes.
But as I say, with the telemetry, with digital, you know, we're doing some quite groundbreaking things, what we call an intelligent or neural network. So this is thinking about the whole ecosystem, literally from when it rains, I won't go through the whole thing, but, you know, and then when clean water goes back into the rivers, that's all underpinned by data and technology. So, yeah, it'd be probably a surprise to a lot of people.
Well, I hope this interview is opening people up to the fact that water is something that we've taken for granted, probably, and it's a precious resource.
Yeah.
And using technology to help us do it better is going to help create a healthier society, a more stable society, because a society without clean water.
It could be, as we go forward, and again, climate change and all that very, very important stuff, water's going to, you know, if you look again at the UK, expanding population and more people, you know, if you go back, I think it's even only 10 years, let alone 20 years, the amount of water we all use per, what we call per capita consumption, to use the lingo, has increased by 50%.
Wow.
Because we've got the hot tubs, the dishwashers, you know, these are all heavy water users. So, yeah, the demand for water plus population increase is going to be interesting to watch.
Moving on from this, I'm going through your profile, I'm getting ready, and I'm like, okay, Chief Modernization Officer, I want to talk about that, but wait a minute, here's an executive who has really invested in developing as a coach.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that. Why coaching? Why as an executive? And how's that been beneficial to you?
Yeah. A guy said to me, that I'm going back again a long time, 10, 20 years ago. He said, and I'd promoted him, Andy Marshall as a name check for him. Andy Marshall. Mm. And he was a regular guy, did a great job. And I took a chance on him and I promoted him. And he never looked back. He went on to become a CIO with a big food group in the UK. And before he left, he said, you know what? He said, I want to just say thank you. He said, you've helped me do something that I never thought I'd ever, I didn't particularly see on my career path. I didn't think I'd become a leader. And the buzz, the you know, feeling of I've actually done something positive there, that was the start of it. And I think, again, without you know bragging about these things, I do keep count, this is sad, of all the people who've worked directly for me over the years, who've gone on to become CIOs. And I passed the 40 mark last year. 40.
40 CIOs yeah. you've mentored or coached.
Yeah. Yeah. That's quite significant.
Well, that is significant, and I got a chill hearing that. So what's the, you've probably connected some dots there.
Yeah.
What is it?
I mean, listen, there's some people who, you know, you know, leadership is, it's there's different styles. People respond differently to things. So, you know, some people, both ways, probably don't think of Andy as the best coach in the world. But that's fine because, you know, what's right for one person's, you know, not necessarily right for everyone. But I think it's, again, without saying some of the cheesy things, being authentic, I think, is very, very key. And not when things are going well, you know, when things are not going well, being authentic, connecting with people. And yeah, for me, as I'm trying to avoid the cheese, we're all in a people business. And I've been, as I say, lucky enough to think, if I surround myself with good people, then we can be successful. If you don't, if you end up doing the job for your people, they never learn. And it's not about you, it's about them. So getting that balance. It's always the results. We never compromise on results. You know, we're in a results business, are we? But it's the way you do it. And like I say, if you connect with people and you develop them, I was very lucky. It happened to me. I worked back in my early career at Asda, who were part of Walmart, as most folks would know, used to be. That leadership, that authentic leadership, is a big piece of who you are, and it resonates with a lot of people. And I say for me, seeing that is better than any transformation I've done, any big systems overhauls, any process improvements, even company turnarounds. The thing that I'm most proud of is, like I said, seeing other people develop and thrive. And
so that is quite a legacy.
Yeah.
Having coached 40 people who have gone on to be CIOs. And I want to make a note for our listeners here that y'all, just a reminder, this is tech. This is CIO.
Yeah.
This is not, I mean, HR, okay, in the people business. Here's the CIO saying, reminding the people that you've coached, you're in the people business, even if you are in the technology world.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, trying to break some of those stereotypes down that kind of technology people can't be good coaches. That's nonsense.
So you mentioned authenticity.
Yep.
When you're coaching someone to become more authentic, what type of advice do you give them?
I try. Let me just back up a bit. A lot of the businesses, not planned by me, but a lot of the businesses I've worked in have been businesses that have needed to be turned around. So you don't have luxury of time. You don't have luxury of a lot of things that you take for granted when you're not working in a business that needs to be turned around. You don't have. So it's a it's a great way of focusing for me and understanding priorities and what's important, what's not important, and getting that sense of cut through. So that's what I've brought to my coaching. As I said, I've been very lucky that I've worked with some of the best. And the only thing I've done is had an ear and an eye for people who do great things and try to copy them. So again, that's the kind of thing.
Learn from the best.
Yeah. It's dead simple. Yeah. When you boil it all down, it's dead simple. If you see and work, whether it's in sport or music or business, if you can recognise when you're working with someone really good, copy, turn it into your own way, but copy all the great things. And equally, when you work with some executives, we all have, who are maybe, you know, not the best. Learn. I honestly, you can learn as much from negative role models as positive role models. And I guess that, back to you, that's the first thing, is look for the role models. And I'm not talking about me, by the way, but, you know, look for the role models. Find yourself a coach or a mentor. Look and observe what they do. And then, not all of it, but you think, I could adapt that for me. I could make that work for me. And that, I think, is the key. You know, it's the classic show me, don't tell me.
Yeah, it's so easy to get so engaged in the work you're doing that you forget to observe the leaders around you and what's working for people.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've got a real call to action for leaders to lift their heads from the grind and the work and observe the bigger world around them, which sounds like a good coaching move, by the way.
And the other thing that I think I've done is you know, again, the number of people, you know, I'm a tech guy, I'm a CIO, you know, How do I get to the executive table, and how do I kind of be a peer? And it's through what you do. Forget whether you, again, I think sometimes CIOs think they're, you know, look at the HR director, sometimes they're not at the top table, or you know the marketing director or whatever. It's park your functional responsibility. And again, for me it's about the leadership and about being an equal. I mean, that's one of the things I've been very lucky in the last couple of businesses I've worked in, that, you know, I've been a close confidant and, dare I say, deputy of the chief executive. So your people are seeing that there's a tech guy who's not only sat at the top table, but he's helping run the business. So, yeah, try and lead by example. Look not just at me, but around you, where people are doing great things, and say, try and copy it and make them your own.
Yeah, you strike me as someone who doesn't show up as, I'm the tech leader, you're a business leader who happens to be in tech.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you've made that. And I think a lot of people get stuck in there.
You read so many articles and things about, you know, how the CIO can, it's how you do it is by business first, technology second. Yeah.
So what advice would you give your younger self, or something that you tell your younger self to try?
Yeah. First of all, is to cherish competence over confidence. That's one I wish I'd have.
Confidence over competence.
Competence over confidence. Yeah. Because you do. I mean, again, it's a bit of a game of opinions as leadership. And there's a lot of people who are smarter than me, who've got the right accent. So these people are very confident people. And you kind of go, you know, they've been to Oxford or Cambridge or wherever. They must be really clever. Obviously there are clever, great people who've been to Oxford and things, but it's the competence.
The competence.
Yeah.
Where does competence come from?
Well, that's, wow. I think I'd be writing leadership things.
Well, you are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you've got to not fear failure. And that's, again, I think something that I would say to my younger self is be less fearful of failure. I mean, for me, it's one of the things that's driven me. It drives a lot of people. We can say lots of different reasons, but fear of failure, I think, does drive a lot of people. But if you learn from it, I think failure, you know, take a chance and in the right, you know, with the right coach, with the right support, Try pushing the boundaries a little bit more. Be a bit braver. Don't fear failure as much, I think would be one of the things that I would I would tell my younger self. And the other one would be, have a plan. I never had a plan. I kind of fell into things. Don't be bound by your plan, but have a shape of a plan. I just fell about things and kind of fell into things. And as I say, very lucky people kind of, I think he might be pretty decent. Let's try him with that. And yeah, have a bit more of a shape of a plan to it. Yeah.
Over the years, what's been your biggest source of inspiration? And when's a difficult moment that it got you through?
Well, again, going back, falling into things, not having the shape, I've just been dead unlucky. I seem to have worked, as people have reminded me, not that they were in businesses that were in trouble before I got there, not that were doing really well and then I got there and were in trouble, but I've worked a lot of businesses that were needed turning around quickly. One, for example, was like 6 weeks away from going under. So I guess...
Someone say that's unlucky to end up at those companies?
Yeah.
And working hard to transform them. So, and you can, I love how you're like, I was lucky to get that challenge.
Yeah. And that's what I was about to go on and say, which is, and I, you know, again, back to the coaching things. Mm-hmm. Run a business like it's going to go out of business in 6 weeks. That's the... Because a lot of stuff we do is no value add. You know, you look at your working week, again, I go back and ask my guys to do this, right? Go back and look last week. How much time did you spend on the big things, the strategic things, the things that are going to move the dial? Mm. And how much time did you spend in meetings, you know? And it's, if at best it's 80-20. 20% of the time they're only spending on the right things because we all have stuff to do. So... it doesn't have to be like that. So, you know, imagine the business is going under in 6 weeks or 6 months. Then, and it's a great way of, I'd say, for me, kind of crystallising what's important, what priorities are, and what things, you know, you can, you know, let someone else do or don't do them.
So important to prioritise.
Yeah.
But I would say that takes it a step further. Imagine the business going out in 6 months or six. Well, you said 6 weeks,
6 weeks,
and it was actually going to happen.
It was, yeah,
and it forced you to prioritize for your team.
Yeah.
And it's really a ruthless business, isn't it? To have to prioritize because you have to let some things go that you would like to do.
Yeah,
but just like patching the bottom line, we'll tend to it later. And it sounds like it's worked out time and time and time again.
Yeah, as I said, I think it's. And the people aspect, again, going back to the people, part of that is, again, you know, you should be spending at least a day a week with your team, not just your direct team, but all your team. You spend a day a week, you're the leader, they need to see you, they need to hear you. Don't get in their way, but you want to be spending 20% of time with your people, I think. So again, that leadership piece, that coaching piece, and they should do the same with their team.
When it's time one day for you to move on from Yorkshire Water, what do you hope your leadership legacy will be?
I think might be coming sooner rather than later. So I'm actually stepping down from full-time executive life in the near future. I'm going to be doing some advisory work with Yorkshire Water after that. But I think, it's the business is unrecognisable. And again, it's not particularly anything I've done. But the team and the strategy that we've put in place, Yorkshire Water is definitely on the way back. More to do, always more to do. But I think, you know, the function's stronger, the business is stronger. Mm. We've had more investment in technology and business process. So I think, you know, it's in good health and it's only going to get better in the next few years.
Oh, man, that's so cool. That plus the 40 CIOs,
yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's not a bad run with it.
It's not bad.
So thinking about Hexaware a little bit, what's been the benefit of working with them in your career?
I was new to Hexaware before I came to Yorkshire Water. I was aware of the name. I'd not worked with them. Again, crikey, is there anyone I've not worked with? Probably not. So Hexaware was a new adventure and experience for me. And I am going to name check somebody. There's a chap who's our, I mean, he's gone on to bigger and better things now, but chap who looks after us at Exaware called Rajiv. And the connection he's driven with Yorkshire Water and all the great things that Hexaware bring. So as I say, I was neutral, not had the experience with them, and now they're, you know, probably our main go-to partner. So this is in 7-8 years. This is quite a recent thing for Yorkshire Water. We'd not worked with them before, and there's many things that I like about them. One is, even despite everything I've said, there's always a challenge. There's a challenge you didn't see, a challenge that kind of looked at like a square but turned into a circle. there's all sorts of things come at you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the many brilliant things that Hexaware do is they're on it. They're flexible. They're not kind of, leave that with us for 3 months and we'll go away and, you know, do a scoping piece on it and then we'll come back to you. They're on it. I mean, literally, in weeks and days, they can have a team on something that we'd never planned, we didn't see. So that flexibility and agility is worth its absolute weight in gold. Allied to, again, the way I work, it's the circle of trust. It's incredibly hard to get into for me, but once you're in there, then and I say Rajiv and the Hexaware team, they've never let us down, and the trust's there. You know, Richard Hainton, who's taking over from me at Yorkshire Water, myself and Rajiv. You know, you can pick the phone up anytime, and we've got a problem, we've got an issue, we need something to look at. This project's come up. It's just bang, it happens. So that trust is incredibly important.
Yeah, trust is so powerful when you prioritize it and you realize that you can trust each other, but you realize how important it is. I think some organizations kind of forget that.
Yeah.
And who better to evaluate that than a utility company where you've got 5 million people depending on you for clean, safe water. Yeah. You guys get trust.
Yeah. So it's I can only see the relationship going from strength to strength, as long as, of course, results business, that goes for everyone. But it's great partner, and delighted that it was a new positive experience for me.
So wrapping this up, Andy, what's your parting thought for our listeners today on CEO Tech Live?
So here's an interesting thing. But,
or maybe not.
given everything that's going on in the world, and particularly the tech and AI, and I do wonder the degree of different skills we're going to need as leaders by the end of this decade. I think it'll be very different, very different.
Not the fundamentals.
Well, so are we going to be driven by data, or are we going to be driven by leadership? Has leadership gone too far? Are we starting to forget how to manage? Because again, if you go back 20, 30 years, leadership, we were all managers, and then we were trying to kind of move the data. Has that gone too far? Question. Are we going to be too reliant on the data and the technology? How do we get that balance between managing leadership and AI and data that could potentially overwhelm and overtake. So if you're a leader going forward, I think you're going to have to stay sharp on your skills to navigate the incredibly challenging and choppy seas that we're in.
That's an interesting perspective, because we all had to lead before without enough data. In fact, I had an early leader that told me, Ben, our job is to lead with terrible data.
Yeah.
Like that was the motto in the probably late 90s, early 2000s. Now we have, and we will have, to your point, more data than we can possibly use, potentially.
I heard a phrase about data being, it's the new oil.
New
oil.
New oil.
But is it the new garbage?
Oh.
Because there's so much of it.
Yeah, so what
is
do you
it going to overwhelm
has,
us? So, are we going to rely on it rather than how do you get the blend? It's like I say, fascinating challenges. positive challenges.
So for a leader stepping into that space now, and some people may already be there, what's your advice to them?
Keep believing in what you're doing, but don't be bound by it. As I say, I think the world is you know, changing. You've got to keep up with it. If you can't keep up with it, you're going to suddenly find it's left you behind. So stay sharp, stay focused, but be pragmatic and keep learning.
Andy, thank you for coming on. See you.
Thank you, Ben.
A lot of fun.
Been great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to CEO Tech Live, powered by Hexaware. Make sure to subscribe now so you're notified when a new episode is released.